Alright, so we'll go ahead and get started. And prisoners, if you're feel free to sit up here, wherever you want to sit, wherever you're comfortable, it's fine with me. This is our session, Funding Communities to Identify Local Needs and Solve Local Public Health Problems. And our first speaker is Dr. Ms. Kelsted. She is a research associate in the Department of Health Promotion and Community Health Sciences at the Texas A&M University School of Public Health. She is currently the product director of a CDC-funded cancer prevention and control research program. Activities that she managed as director include implementation of a mini-grant program, which she will discuss momentarily, and the oversight of several mobile health technology interventions aimed at reducing cancer risk and increasing survivorship.
Thanks, Michelle. First, I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues at Texas A&M University and at Emory University, the University of South Carolina, and the University of Texas at Houston. I have no relationships to disclose. So today I'd like to describe how our Cancer Prevention and Control Research Network has used mini-grant programs to promote evidence-based strategies for cancer prevention and control at multiple sites in a variety of settings. So our network is made up of 10 universities across the U.S., and four of us implemented mini-grant programs in our specific sites. And so together we put together our programs and compared them. We looked at how we were similar, how we were different, and some of the lessons we've learned as a model for others who might wish to implement mini-grant programs. So I'll talk a little bit about what prompted this, some of the background, and then I'll describe each program, although I'm most familiar with what happened at Texas A&M University, so I'll spend a little more time on our mini-grant program, and then I'll discuss some of how we summarized our results together and some of the questions we came up with together. First of all, why would we want to use evidence-based strategies to begin with? We all know that we have a growing challenge in the U.S. With chronic disease. And we also want to be efficient in how we try to intervene. We have these triple aims of improving health care, and reducing costs. And so we also have an expanding inventory of programs and approaches. Two that I'm most familiar with are the research-tested intervention programs. That's a National Cancer Institute inventory, a web-based inventory that you can search for tested interventions. And then there's also the CDC Guide to Community Preventive Services, or the Community Guide, as we call it. So even with an inventory such as this, we still need to find ways to disseminate these programs into our communities. And so we went to the literature and looked at how you can best do that. And to disseminate these kind of programs, participation is really important. Interacting with community leaders, figuring out what they need and how we can help them. And you can couple that with trainings and technical assistance to make it even more effective. And, of course, there are still hard copy guides and manuals available to communities, and these electronic methods like the RTIPS and the Community Guide with web-based warehouses and also webinars. But even with all of that, even with strategies that are available, dissemination techniques to work with communities, we still have a gap in the translating of research into practice. And so we found that money will help. If you can provide some funding, even small amounts of seed grants can help community organizations to make some changes in promoting health. And so money can incentivize a community organization. It can provide practical and much-needed aid, and it also coupled with the technical assistance and trainings can help build capacity in an organization. So I'll start with Emory University. They were the first in our network to begin this program. So they started in 2007, and they had the most comprehensive program with 23 grantees over four cycles and grants ranging from $1,000 to $8,000, so truly mini grants. And their topics included physical activity, nutrition, cancer screening, and tobacco. They had many accomplishments, and these are just a few, that they were able to help their organizations leverage even more funding. And they also used this whole process to develop a national training curriculum that they've just put into place. At Texas A&M, we started in 2010. It spanned over 1 year with five grantees at $10,000 each. So we focused just around the topic of physical activity as a cancer prevention and control. And so I'll tell you just a little bit about the five. We had two parks and rec organizations that used the money to help enhance the infrastructure of the parks. So one was in Temple, Texas, and they put in additional signage, water fountains for people for when they were walking, pet waste disposal, even signage about plants and beautification in the park. And then another park, actually, the one on the top of the picture, was in Navasota, Texas, which is a rural town, and they put lighting in around a park, a trail in a park. And That was very useful because many people, if I don't know how familiar you are with weather in Texas, but in the summer you can't actually go out and walk and run, or not many people do that during the daytime. You have to go either early in the morning or late at night, and so having lighting around your trails is actually very important. We also had a downtown organization that put in a walking trail in a downtown setting, and they had QR codes on maps so people could walk and listen to the history as they walked. And the local stores kept the maps in their stores, so that was an interesting one. We had a children's museum put in an outdoor space for the kids, and they fenced it in and paved some of it with some soft structure. And the last one was in with the AgriLife Extension agents. They put in, they developed some maps in Leon County, which is a very rural county, and people often don't have access to good walking trails. So they made a map of places that people could walk more safely. So those were our five programs. Some of our accomplishments were the downtown Bryan one continued to build new partnerships, and so now they have another organization help print the maps. They have more businesses putting the maps in, so they're sustaining their efforts by their partnerships. And then we saw an overall increase in physical activity as well. The University of South Carolina had three grantees at $10,000 each with physical activity, nutrition, and cancer screening. They improved in all their health topics, and they were able to disseminate their findings with their grantees as co-authors. So that's, again, this participatory research and really working with the community together. And they leveraged more funding for their grantee as well. And then the University of Texas at Houston started a little later in 2012, but they've made their program grow. They've had 13 grantees, 3,500 to 8,000, with a whole variety of topics. So their funding, they've actually leveraged more funding to be able to give out more mini grants. So the mini grant money was being generated through our network, but they were able to leverage more funding so they could do more mini grant programs. And they also have grantees that were able to leverage funding as well. So when we look at how together, what we had in common in our programs, most of us went to our tips in the community guide for our evidence-based strategies. Most of us were interested in physical activity and nutrition, although there were some primary cancer prevention strategies as well. Most of us looked at organizational capacity. I don't have time to go into how we chose who would get the funding, but leadership and experience were important to make sure that we would have success with the funding that we gave. And most common types were community-based or healthcare organizations. Although Emory had some faith-based organizations, there were some school-based organizations as well. Training and technical assistance were really important parts of this program. We divided the training into two separate times. One was for potential applicants, where we got people together and we helped them define evidence, talked about where to find it, you know, how to go to the RTIPS, how to use it, how to use the community guide, and then talked about how to actually implement and evaluate a program. Texas A&M also helped with reviewing the RFA process, so they knew how to complete their application, and a couple of other the organizations did that as well. We had a training then for the people who got the money. So we did some trainings for selected grantees in the form of kickoff events where we went even further into what evidence-based means. And then we also talked about strategies for sustaining. Technical assistance came monthly. Most of us had monthly calls, or even every other week we would have calls with our grantees just to check in. Most of the topics were around budgeting and administrative issues. Again, how to define evidence, and then troubleshooting things that came up along the way. The Texas A&M was, we talked a lot about evaluation because we asked our grantees to give outcome evaluations a try, and they didn't have the expertise to do that. And so some of our technical assistance was around how to conduct an evaluation. So I'm going to show you some of the other topics here in technical assistance and kind of where they fell with our mini grant programs. We had 10 cohorts altogether between the four universities, and so most of ours were around the administrative, the budget, but like I said, Texas A&M, we were looking at evaluation and sustainability. Interesting dissemination is down there with just one organization talking about that. Some of our methods, we're asking our grantees to conduct their own evaluations. University of South Carolina asked their grantees to do this, but they provided technical assistance and showed them what they needed to do. We all required final reports. We asked for progress reports quarterly, and Emory did more with interviews, surveys, focus groups, and site visits. So these are some sample evaluation questions, and this is where it was really helpful to be in the network together, because we could all talk about what we were using and use each other's questions, and these are the domains in which they fell. Context became really important for the mini grant program with Texas A&M. The year that ours was implemented happened to be a really bad drought in Texas in 2010, and so when we had all of these were physical activity, all of these were to take place outside. And so we had people out collecting data to see if there had been a difference between, you know, when it wasn't in place and when they put the infrastructure in place. Of course, that was over the summer when we had the drought, and we didn't see a lot of change. But if you didn't, you know, take into account that we had a drought, you wouldn't understand how to read that. So we were the only ones that asked for outcome evaluations, and sustainability also was a really important thing to be asking our grantees. What were they planning to do once the funds were gone? How are they going to keep the program in place? And here's some more of the questions we used. We were also really interested in facilitators and barriers. What was helping them? What was difficult for them? Staff turnover is a difficult thing with community-based programs. So when we'd have the champion who was all into our program leave, it was really hard to know who was going to fill those shoes. So this leads us to some of the questions we came up with together about the whole program and how this worked. And the very first thing we had to consider was which strategies to disseminate. And like I said, we drew on the RTIPS and the community guide. There's still a very small percentage of people that use these. And so mini grants were an effective way to actually bring this into our communities and help people understand. A question that came up again and again is what counts as evidence. We talk about evidence-based strategies, but that varies by discipline and by funding agency. So we looked to some of the literature, and Brownson and colleagues talked about these four levels of evidence. And evidence-based is that kind of gold standard where it's tested and reported in a peer-reviewed literature. But then we have effective, promising, and emerging evidence as well. And the RTIPS would fit more into the effective, where it's peer-reviewed literature but not as tested as that next level. And promising and emerging is more like reports that people might be able to find about promising evidence. The most important takeaway from this was that we needed to be clear on what we accepted as an evidence-based strategy. University of Texas at Houston had the most broad definition, and so their grantees had a lot of leeway in what they used as evidence-based strategy. And ours only used, we had them use the community guide as their evidence-based strategies in promoting physical activity. So what does training and technical assistance encompass? Again, if we think about different kinds of capacity building, we have the general capacity building that most of our training fell into that category or that domain, and the technical assistance fell more into an innovation-specific capacity as defined by Wandersman and colleagues. So we found that the leadership and experience in an organization were key in helping us decide who was going to do the best at implementing their programs successfully. And then program evaluation is so important, and this was something that we really tried to help our grantees with and help them develop their program plans and their program evaluation plans at the same time and at the beginning. And I think a lot of organizations don't like to do that. They think about evaluation at the end instead of at the beginning and going along with it right as they implement. We had ours try to do outcome evaluations, but of course they weren't rigorous. Emory did a cross-site evaluation on all of their grantees, focused on implementation. And like I said, University of South Carolina had them try to do their own evaluations, but they provided assistance. So this leads us to the question: if we don't have the expertise or the resources to do rigorous outcome evaluations, is this an important component of a program like this? Is it something that's necessary? Should we be doing more of it? And then finally, just some of the questions we don't really have answers for yet, but that we'd like people to consider as they're looking at implementing evidence-based strategies. What level of capacity is needed for effective implementation? It'd be great if we just, you know, had a magic eight ball that told us exactly what would work where. And then what are some of those capacity domains that predict successful implementation? How do our various contextual factors influence implementation? And then finally, for specific interventions, what are those core elements that you have to keep, and what are the ones that can be adapted or changed? And so we continually look at that as we translate research into practice. But overall, the mini grant programs at our four universities were successful, and we recommend that if people want to take evidence-based strategies and put them into their communities, that mini grant funding is an effective way to do that. Thank you.